Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to a Brave New World programme. I'm John Harrison. We know about dictators, about Mao, Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini, Ataturk, and many of us indeed live in countries that have suffered greatly because of their actions. We know that such charismatic people are able to not only convince the masses to follow them, but also to control their own so-called lieutenants with the force of their personalities, with a concoction of fear, insecurity, and manipulation. Perhaps the relevance right now is not only the existence of dictators on a country level, but also how many of these traits are present in the types of personalities that accumulate dictatorial power in large organizations such as corporations. In this program, I talked to Jeff Schubert, who wrote a book on the subject called Dictatorial CEOs. He's visiting Moscow, where he lectures at the High School of Economics. Welcome to the program, Jeff. Now, what briefly, and I know you wrote a book on the subject, so you can talk probably for a few hours on this, but in a few minutes, what are the main character traits of people who fall under the category of so-called dictators?
Well, I think self-belief is very important. And that self-belief may have been from a very young age or just may have come into a stronger force due to their time in power. So self-belief is an important aspect. Willpower is another one. Mm-hmm. People have to want, and maybe some people wanted these things from an early age, but also, once again, time in power and experience can actually lead to an increase in willpower. And I guess the other is important thing is the ability to inspire people, to lead people, to create fear, a stick and carrot approach, if you like, something to make people want to follow you as lieutenants, people close up, but also the ability to, I guess, inspire large sections of the population into believing that you're God, maybe, but people want to believe in something. And if they don't have a God to believe in, they often will start believing in a particular person, a physical man or a woman, who can actually deliver what they perceive to be their needs.
One of the fascinating things I picked up from your book is that these people are able to use their lieutenants in an amazingly effective way. And the lieutenants sort of come to want to be appreciated and to be given a nod of approval by their bosses. And how does that work?
Well, it's just person-to-person psychology, and if a lieutenant believes in the dictator or the person who behaves like a dictator, they get personal satisfaction from that. But often it's also associated with the fact that these lieutenants believe that the dictatorial person is actually doing good things for their company. It can be a big company, even be a smaller company. It can be a sporting association. It can be a business association. And in fact, even, in my view, can be countries. Countries can behave like dictators as well.
Another thing, another aspect of your very interesting book is this concept of gatekeepers. I've always thought of gatekeepers as being sort of very neutral people, but not so when there's a dictatorial CEO around.
Well, gatekeepers play a very important life in any larger organization. They're the people who filter who gets to talk to, who gets to influence the CEO, and they become very important players in themselves because of that ability. Oddly enough, I think perhaps the most interesting example of a gatekeeper right now is General Kelly, the ex-Marine general who's chief of staff in Donald Trump's White House. Now, I think it's but commonly believed that he's now playing a positive role in perhaps restraining some of the wilder impulses of Donald Trump. But it's not always the case that sometimes when the dictatorial CEO is a more restrained personality, the gatekeeper, who's often, you might be called equivalent to a personal secretary in some cases, or a chief of staff, actually may play a negative role by himself or herself filtering who gets to talk to the big boss.
Yeah, right. I guess I'm as a journalist and living in Russia for a long time, I'm sort of fairly anti-capitalist in a way. When I read your book, I thought, well, this must be, you know, something to do with capitalism. But the further I read, I realized that actually it probably isn't, because some of the people you're talking about were ruling countries that were not capitalist at the time. I'm thinking of Mao and to a certain extent Stalin. So I'm just thinking whether is this something to do with traditional capitalism, or do these people come to power regardless of the economic and political political systems in place?
I don't think it's anything to do with the economic system or capitalism. It's more the way societies work. People work, people think. And so in a communist dictatorship, as much as a very capitalistic, excessively free market system, dictatorial CEOs can come into being, except in a country like the Soviet Union, when Stalin was there, of course, that dictator controls basically the whole country. In the case of the United States, example, for now, we have Donald Trump, who I think, if he could be a dictator, he probably has the sort of personality who would become one quite quickly, except he's been restrained by the institutional framework. And in this case, it just happens also to include, I think, his chief of staff, General Kelly.
Yeah. Now, people in power can only exist and stay in power because there's a need for their existence among those who follow them. I mean, that's, I'm talking in very, very general terms. Now, is the existence of sort of dictators really a reflection of some kind of deep human desire, a desire to follow and to believe, you know, as in religion?
Well, in fact, I was just about to make that point. Yeah. I actually believe that religion, my personal view is that there's no objective evidence that there is a God or gods of any sort, but people have this need to believe in something and to protect them, to inspire them. And so religion is the perfect example of this need of society for something, to believe in something. And if there's no religion, often people will turn to other things, and that can often be a dictator, a particular person. Mm-hmm. Some other people might tell you that in the absence of religion, people turn towards nationalism, so and become excessively nationalistic. So, but I think in all cases, in all people, there's this need to believe and has to have some hope for the future, because it's not a particularly beautiful idea to think that, you know, you're going to be here for a few years, then you're going to die, and you're just going to rot away in a hole in the ground somewhere.
Well, that's with that interesting thought, let's take a short break. Welcome back to Brave New World Programme. Today I'm talking to Jeff Schubert, who wrote a book on the subject of dictators. The book's called Dictatorial CEOs. Jeff visits Moscow regularly, where he lectures at the High School of Economics. So, judging by what you've just told us, are we now forever destined to be manipulated by dictators then?
I think so.
Okay, that's a quick answer.
Yes, it is. Yes. But I mean, there's a long history. I mean, if you look at the circumstance and the type of people, going back as far as Julius Caesar. I mean, I only wrote really about people from Napoleon onwards because we have more documentary evidence about what they were like and what their lieutenants thought. And it's only really starting with the time of Napoleon that we have significant diaries, for example, the personal diaries of people, newspapers, which tell us a lot, and journals, which tell us a lot. Prior to that, it becomes very, you know, scratchy. You have to dig around for information. You don't really know how reliable it is. But once you get into the modern age, or at least the age starting with Napoleon, we have lots of information. And it's not always just available at the time. It's often available only afterwards when people retire, publish their diaries, publish their thoughts. And of course, there's lots of biases there. So you need to try and balance what they're saying with what other people are saying. But there's a great commonality, I think, between these people. And in terms of what they were like, their basic personalities, how they changed, how their personalities changed over the long period of time in which they were dictators. And whether it's a company or a government or even a country which is top dog for a long period of time, will start to believe in itself. And I think one example is American exceptionalism. The collapse of the Soviet Union left the world with one really powerful country, a unipower, and that led to the United States believing that it was so exceptional that it could do whatever it wanted. And invasion of Iraq was an example of that. And I think we have seen what the consequences of that have been in terms of turmoil, or further turmoil, in the Middle East. The expansion of NATO, I think, was something that they thought they could do and that Russia would just put up with it. And of course, we saw to a degree what some of the consequences of that were. More recently, we've had issues associated with China. America does not like the idea that there's a new power arising, and it reduces some of its possibilities in acting in a dictatorial way. But I think Xi Jinping this week at the Communist Party Congress in Beijing, and his speeches has made it very clear that China is not going to be dictated to and wants to play a greater role in the world. So we're moving from a one-country dictatorial system or uni-power to a bilateral or even multilateral power system.
Okay, well, that statement you just made is highly interesting because it coincides with this globalist view of things that we are now in the internet age and it's more difficult to control flows of information than it was before. Now, the argument that I want to throw at you, which hopefully you will dismiss, is that the internet age makes it more difficult for dictators to survive because populations are becoming aware of different mindsets or different ways of viewing the world. Do you think that now in the 21st century there's going to be fewer such mega personalities around to manipulate us all because of the internet?
I think there's two aspects to that. Yeah. One is that you're right, greater information should mean that most people have access to it and most people have the possibilities of deciding what they want to read, what they want to know, and what they want to do about it. But the other side is that people also can talk to people who think like themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people...
The echo chamber.
The echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And this is... I mean, it happened before the age of the internet. People would obviously talk to each other and people who have similar views to yourself, you associate with them and you have your views reinforced. But the internet has given the possibility with social media, the possibility of that being reinforced. So it's working both ways.
And I've got a question regarding gender politics. All the people that you wrote about in your book happen to be male. Do you see that this is sort of dictator thing is a man thing? I mean, do you think with the advent of gender warfare, feminism, then we're entering a new epoch of some kind?
No, I doubt it. I think that both men and women are capable of behaving the same way. It just so happens that for most of history, men have had a more powerful position by dint of being bigger, generally stronger, and not necessarily smarter, but having the ability to engage in warfare, etc. And women, of course, often find that their lives are diverted by having children. That takes up time, that takes up energy, and it takes away some of the possibilities of accumulating power, and particularly dictatorial power.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking of Margaret Thatcher, actually, when you were saying those words, and I remember reading some of the conversations between her and Geoffrey Howe and other lieutenants, and I definitely recognise that this sort of trait is not just a masculine thing, it can well be a female thing as well. Okay, well, that's another devastating blow to my anti-sort of dictatorial theories, but so we really are down to a basic need that human beings all over the world throughout history experience and have experienced. That is the need to follow and the need to believe in something. One can say perhaps that we should be aware of this and we should educate people to be aware of this. Is that possible to educate young people about this?
I'm not too sure that young people like reading about these things.
So
I guess it's possible to try and force it down their throats. But there's so many distractions now that people are not going to sit down and read a book like mine. So it's still up in the air. The other issue is also, I think we see in China right now that it's very easy to manipulate populations and ideas. When I was in China talking about One Belt, One Road about a year ago, all the Chinese think tank people I met were all speaking the same. And I think as Xi Jinping increases his power in China and it is getting increasingly strong and increasingly dictatorial, the tendency to follow the same line will be strengthened. And because to a certain extent he's creating pride in China, he's cutting off information by blocking aspects of the internet, he will increase his following and his popularity, and that will basically give him some successes, which in turn will produce or increase his popularity. I mean, one of the other interesting things I think in all this is that when things go wrong, people do not want to blame the dictator. They will look for somebody else to blame.
Yeah.
It's one of his lieutenants is the problem, not him or her.
Okay, final question. We've actually run out of time completely, but I'm just fascinating. Is this tendency to be gullible and follow the hypnotic commands of a dictator coming to power more prevalent in some cultures than others, or is it a widespread global phenomenon?
No, I mean, I partly chose the people in this book because you had a couple from Europe, you had one from China, you had one from the Middle East, you had a communist system, you had a capitalist system, and it was over a couple of centuries. So I purposely looked at other cultures or variety of cultures and over a period of time.
It makes no difference then. How depressing. Thank you very much.
It's a
very important discussion. Thank you very much indeed, Jeff Schubert, who is an author and has written a book on the subject called Dictatorial CEOs. He visits Moscow, where he teaches at the High School of Economics in Moscow. And thank you very much indeed, listeners, for being with us. I hope you haven't been frightened by today's program. Goodbye.